Ryan Peacock and Antonio Kruger. Now, here's Owen Grohman.
Here is Owen Grohman. Am I on? Does this sound weird to you guys? The headphones are so far down, that's why. We're in.
There we go.
Thank you. There I go.
Nothing like production issues to get you started on Sports Outside the Mainstream. Friday, May 18th.
Sounds good.
2007. San Francisco State University's finest radio station. Only radio station is KSFS, the state. And here we are, myself, Owen Grohman. I'm joined with Brian Peacock, creepily, not lovingly, as he said last week. Behind me, Eamon Sweeney, Antonio Kruger. I suppose you guys want to talk about the National Basketball Association.
You trying to hold your tongue over there?
I have to. I think what I called it in my email was most appropriate. National BS Association, but you add the S, that sounds weird, but you know what I mean.
See what he did there? He turned
you
it around.
You see what I did? You see what I did?
He said BS instead of basketball. That's pretty good stuff. Real knee slapper.
Do I have to give you a Kleenex as well?
You know what? I don't know what's happening. I guess we have no choice but to talk about the Suns and Spurs first. It's a huge topic. It's everything. I wish it was already over, but it's not. By the way, Ant, I have saved every one of those text messages. I just want to make sure everybody's aware that Antonio Kruger has set new records for homerism with these text messages.
Challenge.
Unbelievable.
Challenge my words, please.
Unbelievable how homerish all this stuff is. But anyway, so the Suns and Spurs, it looks like the Spurs are going to take it now. I mean, it's a clear path.
Is it really?
I think it is.
I mean, game six tonight, San Antonio's still playing shorthanded. Phoenix is back to full strength. And according to D'Antoni, we won the last game there in San Antonio, so we've got plenty of momentum for tonight. So I don't think anything is a walk.
And you also said that the Spurs are known for not clinching at home. They're known for clinching on the road. You said that in a previous show.
Correct. I think over the last 3 or 4 years, in closeout games, they've lost 3 occasions. And all 3 occasions were home games, and they then followed up by winning on the road.
But I do think as NBA fans and as people who've been following this series on a fairly close basis, you want this to go to Game 7. You want that last game to not really count. You want to have everybody at full strength and have game number 7. As you know, everybody's got all their players, no suspensions. It's all about basketball this time and not about the interpretation of a probably an outdated rule or a rule that does need to be changed.
You mean the royal you. You don't mean me.
Well, I don't mean Spurs homers. No, I do not. I'm excluding you from this conversation. I'm more or less talking about people who've been affected by what is the actual name of the rule? Just like not leaving the bench. Does it have a name of it?
Probably has more like a number. 10.3 on page 10. You know, it's interesting. We're talking about rules. I don't know. Have you guys had any homework assignments lately?
I'm sure we have.
That had due dates. You ever find that if you don't turn things in on time, they don't count?
Yeah, actually, yesterday I turned in something late to get full credit for it. So I don't really know what you mean.
It's a San Francisco State, Ant. I mean, I know where you're going with it, but it's not going to fly at this school.
Yeah, we are at a state college. It's San Francisco State, so it's one of the best state colleges around, but it's it's not the Harvard of the West.
How about this? When's graduation day?
May 26th.
All right, you think if you show up on the 27th, they'll keep the stage up for you?
Yeah, probably for me. I don't know. If Eamon's trying to graduate, I doubt it.
The stage will be there because they're probably too lazy to take it down.
Ooh,
but
wow.
Now we're just digging on stage. Where are we going with it?
We've totally left basketball.
Just go ahead with it. Make the point.
Point being, you got to show up at a certain time. That's the rule. Well, rule says don't leave the bench. I think that's kind of clear. And instead of focusing on the two idiots that left the bench, there were 6 Suns players and 8 Spurs players on their respective benches that kept themselves where they were supposed to be, which tells me that other people are aware of the rule and know what they're doing. 2 guys knew the rule and chose to not use their heads. To be fair, I don't think Boris Diaw should have been suspended.
But I'd say in that vein, there was clearly a play where Duncan left the bench. And he was almost past the 3-point line. Why wasn't Duncan suspended for just the same deal? If it's a clear-cut rule that if you leave the bench during even a small altercation, even just a bump and, you know, some guys knocked him over, if you leave the bench, why isn't Duncan suspended at all?
Probably because you added a word to the rule. You said a small altercation. I think the rule says during an actual altercation, and there was no altercation. According to Stu Jackson.
They stumbled over each other. It could have been conceived as a fight.
Well, we're getting laughter for something completely unrelated to basketball.
All right, I'm sorry. Brian Peacock, guy just kills me. But there's these photos at ksfssports@gmail.com if you want to email us and join us. Brian Peacock, who's actually in the studio, always joins us anyway, decided to join us via email. I'm sorry to break away from Spurs Suns, but they're pictures. I don't know why.
The first one is especially for Eamon because I don't know it's his one of his favorite draft picks, Brady Quinn.
Why would you email
like
these?
Early
though,
college.
All it's gonna do is cut me up and make. And
this is what insomnia will do for you.
Oh.
This is late night Brian Peacock. That's
that appears to be
insomniac.
Is that Jeter on the right there with Alex Rodriguez?
And
other naked men.
Yeah.
Here's Jeter back in the day, fairly comical.
Okay.
For our listening audience, I could give you a web address, I guess, but here's what it's all about. What is that?
Yeah, I've not to rain on the parade. I've seen these photos and I did laugh, but yeah, wow. Kind of getting a little homoerotic in here. Kind of odd, a little bit. Have you seen the? I'll ask Brian as we're gonna switch mics in a vicious game of microphone pong here. Have you seen the new Brady Quinn wedding photos?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
yeah, those are quite the doozy. There's a new. A wedding photography company that did the AJ Hawk Brady Quinn sister's wedding, and there are some pictures of Brady Quinn dressed up as a one of the YMCA. What was it? The Village People. Yeah, and so he's dressed up in that. So
on his wedding day?
No, on his sister's wedding day. But he decided to get up in the Village People get up, like a little sleeveless gay attire, and he also took a photo with that. With a magazine, I think just wearing some sort of shorts or whatever, and it turned out to be that was the old photographer for Out magazine, which was a gay magazine. So,
well, anyway, that's
Brady Quinn's in question right now.
He's a fun-loving Cleveland Brown. I apologize for opening that and starting to laugh and distracting the Sun Spurs conversation.
Yeah,
please continue.
Pick up.
Are we at a stopping point, or I mean, we're gonna stay with Spurs Suns, but
yeah.
Can I say my piece on this real quick?
All right, go right ahead.
Go right ahead.
I'm asking Ant. Really, this is the Antonio Kruger Show, and we're talking
currently
about Spurs.
Currently unsponsored.
Actually, Equity Clocks. What's that?
The San Antonio Kruger Show.
Ah, clever. Very, well. Very clever.
All right, here's the deal with me. I think we should make this clear that I think we all feel, and I certainly feel, and I told you repeatedly, going to Vegas, I take Spurs over Suns. I don't think it's like the officials lost the series for the Suns. I don't feel that way at all. However, I just think it's annoying that for the second straight year, the playoffs are so adversely affected by officiating. And this time it's not the guys on the court necessarily. They probably handled it okay, whatever. But it was from on high, from the commish's office, from Stu Jackson. It's just really unfortunate because Phoenix won that game 4, and that was a surprise to me. We were discussing things during that game by text message, and we were talking, and I told you I felt the Spurs were the better team. You agreed with me, and then, whoa, I start doing something else, and suddenly the Suns won that game. And I was like, wow, good win for them. All I saw was highlights, but I just, you know, okay, they won the game, good for them. They were set up for game 5 at home, which could have been, it's literally pivotal game. And it's just too bad that it happened the way it did. And they created this opportunity for themselves. And then it was a huge opportunity for them to prove those, you know, so many people that say running can't win in the playoffs. Running can't win in the playoffs. That's why the Warriors will never win. Okay, granted. And and that's why the Suns can never win a finals. But they really set themselves up to get past the Spurs. And then from there, it was the Jazz. And this and that. And again, it wouldn't have been a clear-cut thing if they go ahead 3-2, obviously. The Spurs can come back. But it's just so unfortunate that the officials... officiating is the main reason that this opportunity was lost. It's not that this decided the series either way. You still got to play the game on the court. That's the point. I know you're hammering and you're going to keep hammering, but it's just too bad that officiating had to come into play as it did. This is a rule that could have been interpreted differently. To David Stern's credit, he's very good at arguing his own side. He says things with so much certainty, and he usually dashes in a little bit of humor. He said, "What should we have more assistant coaches? The job of the assistant coaches. One of the key jobs at game time is to keep the players on the bench." And ESPN did a nice job of cutting to that scene, and there were no assistant coaches keeping the Suns on the bench. So their mistake at that point, but still, Did it really have to affect the series so greatly? Could they have just let them play a little bit there?
To me, I won't even hammer the issue of you still got to play the games. It's just two things, the issue of self-responsibility and the issue of consistency. From the issue of self-responsibility, you are responsible as an athlete to maintain your poise and to do your job, whether that's rotate on defense, get back on defense, whether that's keep your butt on the bench during an altercation. And I think the only reason that we're even talking about this is because of Stoudemire, even more than Diaw. I don't think Diaw should have been suspended by the letter of the law. He took, I don't know, 5-6 steps from his chair. His feet never touched the actual playing floor, and he caught himself and immediately ran back. He wasn't restrained. My personal interpretation of his behavior is that he was going to go run and help his own teammate up, Steve Nash. I don't think he wanted to be involved in the fight. Stoudemire not only hit the playing floor, he had to be restrained by assistant coaches and by the official turning around saying, stop, 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 I've got this. Stoudemire wanted to get involved. His goal was to get involved and cause problems. If he takes 3 more steps, this isn't even a discussion because he would have been involved and everyone would have said, oh, it's obvious he deserves suspension. So that was his intent. I don't understand why people are trying to excuse their behavior. Last year when Rajah Bell clotheslined Kobe Bryant, did any member of the Lakers come off the bench? Did any member of the Suns come off the bench?
Because they don't like Kobe.
Doesn't matter.
Just kidding.
When Jay Rich put Mehmet Okur on the floor Sunday, right in front of the Jazz bench, did any Jazz player get up and run? No, they didn't. Did any Warrior player get up and run? No, they didn't. You know why? Because they're doing their part.
I would say just by sheer proximity, there was a reason for that. If it happened right in front of your bench at the scorer's table, it may have been different. Mehmet Okur was clearly in the lane. In other cases, when Baron Davis elbowed Derek Fisher, he was on the other side of the court. I think just by sheer proximity, that's why they jumped off the bench. If it happened right in front of you, how could you just sit there and not do anything?
6 Suns managed to do that.
Well, you know, 6 Suns, yeah, that are, you know, the Pat Burks of the league on the end of the bench managed to stay there. The other good players are on the floor.
Those are the guys who sit on the bench all the time. They know that you can't get up. That's like their main rule. Hey, Pat, I want you to do something for me today.
Yeah.
How about you don't get up off the bench no matter what happens, okay?
Boris Diaw.
Do that for me?
Yeah, Boris Diaw is European anyway, so he probably got somebody else to go up there and, you know, do his fighting for him. Stoudemire, there's no defense.
Stoudemire's a knucklehead. We all know Amari Stoudemire. The thing that maybe the saddest part is I doubt Amari Stoudemire does care about Steve Nash. He's just a psycho. He's just a nutcase. He's kind of a knucklehead. He's not a real bright guy. But
The one thing that Antonio was talking about was intent, and that's where the rule gets fuzzy, and that's the whole problem with this whole thing is what is the rule? Getting up off the bench shouldn't be a suspension, you know. Even taking one step onto the floor, I mean, you know, what the immediate vicinity of the bench area or something like that, I think is how the rule is worded. But you can't
– So there's some interpretation there, right?
You can't look at a player and say, what was his intent? Was he going to go fight somebody? Was he just going to go, you know – pick up a teammate off the floor and help him up? Was you can't judge intent, and the fact that neither player did get involved, I think, should be what the final rule is. So the fact that neither one got involved, I don't see why there should be any suspension there. And I think they just need to go back and look at the rule, make sure it's worded correctly, where it's you know, it's like a foul line. Is it fair or is it foul? You know, is it, at what point is it a suspension? At one point, is it not a suspension? And that's where the league is kind of in trouble, because it's just a wishy-washy rule. And the thing that you said about, did any San Antonio Spurs get off the bench? Well, probably not, because they already knew it was coming. They're like, guys, we're going to see if we can get one of their stars out for a game or two.
No, everyone hold your water.
I like that.
It's
like
kind of like, you know, going with the long snap count.
Bunch of cheap
Everybody
Spurs.
Hold your water. Let's see what we can do here. See if we can get a little edge up in game 5.
It's funny that's been this rumored thought of, did Robert Horry know what he was doing?
Rumored via email by us.
So you have a team coming out of a timeout down 3 points. You make a shot to tie the game. Suns are going to call a timeout. You're not worried about anything else. If we make it, we foul. You know, if we make a 2, you foul. If you make a 3, you get back on D. If you miss, you foul. Robert Horry wasn't trying to do anything. Why would he try and get himself suspended for a possible swing game? What Robert Horry did was he went over to Steve Nash, probably with the goal of taking a charge. That's what he said, so I'll take him at his word.
And of course you will.
And at the last moment, he decided to level Steve Nash. And you know what? Was the foul excessive? Yes. Was it any more excessive than Jay Rich on Okur? No.
But
was it more excessive?
We're talking about this series, though. We're not talking about other series. If you want to be – because like we talked about earlier, refs have different games you're the referee.
Yeah, but this is a Stu Jackson issue, not a referee in the game.
But
issue.
I'd say like you judge a game like say Kings Mavericks a couple years ago differently than you would judge like Spurs Lakers.
Actually, you don't.
You're not supposed to, but you do.
No,
I mean,
actually, you don't. And that's the thing about the rule. Do I think the rule should be altered in some way? Yes. I think it's human reaction for guys to stand up and take one step forward.
You're told your entire life as an athlete to react and to do something based off your reaction.
So I don't think there's any doubt. I don't think you can find anybody involved in the NBA, fan or anything else, who says, let's broaden the rule a little bit. No problem. However, if the rule was more broad, would that have saved Stoudemire? Personally, I don't think so. Did I want him suspended? No, because I don't want excuses. The Suns fans have been whining since before the series even started.
I'll give you that. I believe you on that point. I know how you feel as a Spurs guy, being one of the probably the dominant team of the NBA the last several years. I feel that same way with the Patriots. I don't want anything to cheapen our great victories.
Exactly. And that's all that this is
done. And the Red Sox right now, Eamon.
Yeah, that's right. Let's just let's all get on our ivory tower and cast judgment down.
Quite honestly, you know what this series is about?
I love the ivory tower stuff.
It's about Stoudemire's immaturity. You got a guy who, after a Game 2 victory, when his team has momentum, starts complaining about Bruce Bowen and Ginobili going into San Antonio. Then, as he gets in foul trouble because of his inability to rotate well on defense and know when to foul and when not to, pouts on the bench because of his own poor defensive play. And then at the end of Game 4, after all this drama, he turns to the crowd and starts chanting, "Dirty, dirty, dirty, why don't you guys call me names now?" This is what he's worried about with 10 seconds to go in the game, is getting back at the fans. Unfortunately, he behaves like an idiot. He's immature. If he was more mature, he'd be a more complete player. As a more complete player, he'd probably spend more minutes on the floor. He probably wouldn't have been suspended for Game 5, and he would have given his team a better chance to actually win Game 5. So, to me, it's not about can the Suns win as a running team. It's more about when will they have one of their star players. He's the third of the triangle. This team is about Nash, Marion, and Stoudemire. They proved last year they can win without Amare. They cannot win without Steve Nash. We know that. And I personally don't think that they are anything beyond a first-round winning team without Sean Marion. So Stoudemire has to recognize his role as one of the key components. Did Manu Ginobili throw a fit when Rajah Bell gave him a forearm to the neck in Game 1? No, he got up and made 2 free throws. Did the Spurs after the game complain about Rajah Bell being dirty and the officials should have called a flagrant? No, they played through and they won the game because it's playoff basketball. Are you a man or not? If you want the championship, you got to fight for it. You get your butt up, you go to the free throw line, you stop complaining like Mike D'Antoni did after Game 3, where he threw the little tantrum with the scores card on the ground and all that kind of stuff.
Mike D'Antoni is an all-time great tantrum thrower, I have to say.
Yeah. May I just call him a bitcher and whiner? That's all he does.
Should we bring up the Hall of Fame conversation again? Because that was awesome last time.
How'd that go?
It went all right. No, I'm just saying. All no, right. But yeah. I would say this has just gotten out of hand. It was the refs decided this is the way it's going to be played early and often, with the Spurs, you know, getting away with a lot of things. Mainly
now
the
that sounds like a little haterade, because I could watch a game with you and point out missed calls both ways.
Like Eamon said last week, I don't have 19 hours to spend.
Yeah, you have to have the haterade to, you know, kind of mix in and water down the homerism there.
No, it's they miss calls both ways.
No,
that's
now we've seen the Achilles kick from Bowen to Stoudemire. That's on video. You see the kick there. Then you see the Bowen knee to the groin of Nash.
They called a foul on that, by the way.
Yeah. Then you,
so what's the complaint?
I'm saying there should be
the
more than
complaint is
that.
Steve Nash can't have kids anymore.
That's right.
When are we going to get our next point guard?
Well, I guess that's sad for Hollywood, because he won't be able to produce more actors. But, you know.
Wow. No, but I would say, and then of course you get the Ori.
They didn't get it at first. That was a good one.
Who looks at Will? Looks like Will Smith.
He used to look like Will Smith.
As Nash said, and as I said, the second it happened, he thought he was Rick Nash of the Columbus BJs, as Owen's favorite team.
Thank you.
And he checked him into the boards. I mean,
Robert Ori?
I don't know where we're at right now with Rick Nash and Robert Ori and Will Smith.
He was saying he's going to get a charge. Usually, as the person receiving a charge, you do not initiate set charge with your shoulder into a point guard who is literally a foot shorter than you.
You don't think Nash was acting
a little
bit?
But why did Ori do it?
Why did Ori do it? Because, now you talk about interpretation. I'm going to interpretate my guy. Ori didn't play very much in the second half. I think he was a little bit pissed about
the Reverend
time.
Antonio
there
Kruger.
You go.
Thank you.
I think he got in the game. He's upset with his team playing poorly. Throughout the fourth quarter, and really throughout the game, Rajah Bell was doing a lot of elbows in the back and stuff. I think you watch that stuff and you get a little frustrated. And on the missed Ginobili shot, in which he appeared to get fouled, but you noticed there was no complaining, Rajah Bell put a forearm in Ori's back and put him on the ground. I think Ori got up and, as a veteran, was a little bit ticked off. I think he let his emotions get the best of him, and he made a mistake. He went over there and hit a guy a little bit harder than he should have. And since he's bigger than Nash, you see the end result. Now, if Nash was hurt, why was he laying on the ground and then all of a sudden found the strength to jump up and attack Ori once everyone
around? I don't think anybody ever said he was hurt. I just think it was out of line. You talked about being a man. Nothing more manly than, you know, going after a guy a foot shorter than you and just elbowing him or dropping a shoulder on him when he's not expecting it. I mean,
so the punishment then did happen. Ori was thrown out of the game.
No. Ori gets kicked out, 2-game suspension, and then that should be it. Spurs should be without their most clutch
shooter. So where's the self-responsibility on Stoudemire? Again, I don't think he should have been suspended, but he did break a rule that has been applied across the board
and
consistently.
That's probably the problem, because I think
it's not an official issue. It's a league issue, of which all owners have a say-so in changing, but they haven't
changed. If they
would have
called this game tougher, if they would have called this game tighter, they would have never gotten out of hand.
Well, then in that case, it is an official's problem.
Yes, that's what I've been saying.
But
so Violet Palmer should have been there.
Violet Palmer
should have
been there. Joey Crawford should have been there.
But do you know,
Duncan be out of the game right now. It'd be Ginobili and
Do you know who was officiating that night?
Get in there and make me some eggs in the kitchen.
Do you know who the lead official was that
I have night? I wasn't paying attention to the officials, I'll be perfectly honest.
Steve Javy, who's considered now the best official
by
in the
Spurs
NBA.
Fans.
No.
Officially endorsed by the Spurs message board.
No. Actually, Duncan doesn't like Steve Javy because Steve Javy.
Duncan doesn't like anybody but Duncan.
So it appears to me, this is what the league says. Steve Javy is the best official. You hear broadcasters say it. He's the one guy along
with Joey.
It's
a guy with the slick back hair.
Yeah, who calls technicals pretty easily on anybody.
I like Steve Javy.
He's known as a guy who does not get riled up by the road crowd or the momentum of the game. He calls what he thinks. And if you notice, Duncan got in foul trouble in a Steve Javy game. His foul trouble actually contributed to the Suns' comeback in the fourth quarter. And then when Duncan, at the beginning of the fourth quarter, Spurs up by 11, I think there were 3 straight possessions where Duncan was called for a travel, an offensive foul, and a travel by Steve Javy. At that point, he had to go to the bench. That's when the game slowly, methodically turned Phoenix's way. Did you see San Antonio complaining after the game the way that D'Antoni did after game 3?
We don't see it all.
Well, I do, and they didn't. And you know why they didn't? Because Pop's thing is play through it. You know what? The officiating wasn't great, but you still had a 7-point lead with 3 minutes to go. Do your job as a player, finish the game, and the officials don't have any impact over that. The officials had nothing to do with the Spurs stop going to Duncan in the post in the last 3 minutes of the game. That was a Spurs decision, not an officiating decision. Stoudemire leaving the bench, not an official's decision, a Stoudemire decision. Be a man, accept your punishment. End of story. To me, that there is no debate. I wish that Amari hadn't have been suspended. I wish he was playing. Duncan eats his butt alive and gets him in foul trouble, so I wish he had been in game 5, as far as I'm concerned. Not to mention, I think the Spurs would have played better. There's that natural, what have we talked about on the show before? The one thing you don't want for your team is weirdness. You don't want guys getting hurt last minute for one game, suspensions, weird fan. Look at the Derek Fisher thing in game 2. The guy comes back from New York, and without him, there's no way Utah wins that game. I don't like any of that kind of stuff. And game 5 went the exact way I thought it would. Spurs come out a little timid. Suns come out on fire. Took a big lead, but what does San Antonio do? They always stick with the plan and methodically hang in there. And if you give them a window, they will find a way to win, and they deserve credit for winning an incredibly difficult game on the road in a swing game, which was their 8th straight game 5
but
victory.
But do you think they would have won that game if they had Stoudemire and Dia?
How do I know?
Well,
here you go.
I just think the Suns would have won that game if everybody was at full strength, no ruling was there.
How do we know?
I'm saying. It shouldn't have never happened. It should have never happened.
The Spurs went in there in game 1 with the Suns full strength and won. They beat them in game 3 full strength. And in game 4, they dominated them for 45 of the first 48 minutes. San Antonio, through 4 games, is still the better team in the series. They're not going to be afraid of Phoenix in game 5 or game 7 if it happens. So
I just think right now, in terms of everybody who's not a Spurs fan, everybody out there who's a basketball fan is hoping the Suns win this game tonight.
Thanks to the mainstream media, with now Ori's a dirty player, 13 years in the league, never done anything dirty, and now the guy's a dirty player.
We were talking off air. You guys all read Bill Simmons and everybody. He says, if you do not think the Spurs are dirty, you're crazy.
And Bill, unfortunately, gave in to the mainstream.
Oh, yeah. The mainstream hates the Spurs. That's all it takes.
It's not even the mainstream hates the Spurs. In all honesty, why does a team who was for the last 10 years boring, plodding, doesn't get good ratings, just plays good defense and has a bunch of good guys? I've heard NBA experts say, where are the great rivalries, man? Where is it where the teams hate each other? Now, we finally have a legit rivalry. Two teams
and their fan bases ruin the rivalry.
Who don't like it. The rivalry now is actually part of the Nash play that accelerated it. And now all of a sudden the Spurs are dirty after one Robert Horry play, after one play he's dirty.
I'll give you the truth of it that when teams reach a certain level of I want to hold back on greatness because the Spurs, it's been a couple years since they did win a championship, but people are going to look for stuff for sure.
Hey, oh, yeah.
Again, we'll use a parallel to my Patriots, of course, as Eamon loves to hear. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, it's just...
You're with me? Listen closely.
My headphones
remember
are on.
The Patriots secondary, dirty. You remember hearing that kind of stuff? They're dirty players back there. They played the game the right way. So I know where you're coming from. The homerism is pretty amazing, and we're going to get to that. We're at 1 o'clock right now, top of the hour on KSFS The State. Sports outside the mainstream. We're going to take a quick break. Come back. We're not done with Spurs Suns. We do have to wrap the Warriors Jazz. Part of the difficulty of our schedule.
Is Jay Rich dirty? There's a question.
Jay Rich rides dirty.
That's right.
You better believe it.
Don't get him in trouble now.
And we got a couple more hours, so we're going to talk about Major League Baseball at length. That's my demand for the day.
Is that because the Red Sox are doing well?
9.5 up. Thank you. We'll be right back on Sports Outside the Mainstream.
SFSU.edu, the place you get the best jocks, the best rocks, and the best talks in the Bay Area. Streaming 24/7. Request call 415-338-1532. Only at KSFS San Francisco.
You're listening to KSFS San Francisco. This is the ancient sound of Japan. And this is what today's Japanese music sounds like. Bay Area's only source for today's best Japanese music, Samurai Radio.
Hi, this is Jesse from Rise in Japan. You are listening to Samurai Radio from San Francisco.
Hey, what's up? This is Howie of Nikitin from Chiba, Japan.
Hi, this is Oko
and Hiroshi Buster
from Rule Bones.
Hi, this is Kumi.
This is Naoki
from Love Psychedelic.
This is the Hiro.
Hi, this is Fumio from Kimori. Samurai Radio rocks.
Samurai Radio on 88.1 FM, San Francisco.
Your favorite characters.
Why don't you get yourself a nice girl?
I get a nice one almost every night, man.
Yeah, but get yourself a girl so you could settle down.
I settle down almost every night, but then in the morning I'm free. I love you. I want to be with you.
Why don't you settle down?
Here on Sports Outside the Mainstream.
Something I wanted to run by you, Ant, before we finish with the Sun-Spurs stuff. I referenced it in an email. We've been shooting around emails, talking mostly about how bad the Spurs are, what awful people they are. But I did want to ask you, or at least hear your thoughts on... I think there has to be, and there is, and there should be an idea among teams, especially teams that play the Suns consistently, that you should hit Steve Nash. You should bang him up as much as you can. He's a little bit of a littler guy. He's a tough guy for what he is. But you should get a body on him and do what you can and all that kind of stuff. How much do you think the Spurs buy into that? And I'm baiting you for some more homerism, certainly, but I do want to see what you think about that idea.
Well, this is the fourth time they've played a Steve Nash team, if I'm correct, in the playoffs. This is the third time they've played them with something on the line. When he was with Dallas in 03, Phoenix in 05, and both of those were conference finals. And now this year, San Antonio's strategy has always been make him a scorer, make him more of a shooter instead of a passer, make him work on the defensive end by making him guard Tony Parker, although this year the Suns have put him more on Bruce Bowen. And by the fifth and sixth game of the series, his legs begin to wear out. So if you can get up on him, press him, trap him on the pick and roll, make him a score as much as possible, make him play both ends, and the more that you keep the lead, the shorter rest D'Antoni can give him. So you start getting his minutes up in that 43, 44, 45-minute bracket. By the fifth and sixth game of the series, he starts to wear down in the fourth quarter. And that happened very much in 03 when he was with the Mavs. It happened a little bit 2 years ago, although then they only went five games. And you saw it a little bit towards the end of Game 5 the other night, and we'll see how it impacts tonight. But I do think that's Pop's strategy, and I think the strategy has changed a little bit this year. That worked in Game 1, and what Mike D'Antoni has done is decided that he doesn't want Steve Nash just to be a scorer because then no one else gets involved. So Pop has put Bowen on him. They don't trap the pick and roll as much, which you can't do with Amari in there because he'll roll to the hoop. And Nash is determined to still be a distributor. And with that, you saw him have 8 turnovers in Game 4.
But I guess my question was really, does the brutal cheap shot by Robert Horry, is that just part of the attack Steve Nash game plan that the Spurs have? Is it a result of the drawing board where they have various pictures of how they're going to murder Steve Nash within the series?
I like the brutal cheap shot since it wasn't brutal or cheap. I'll answer the way Pop did in his press conference when a reporter says, the incident with Horry, and he says, the foul? It was a foul. Because that's what it was, a foul. They called it a flagrant, so be it. But it was a foul. It wasn't anything else.
I think it was an incident.
Apparently,
I'm going to run with that.
It's become an incident, that's for sure.
It's almost an international incident.
I do have a question for you guys, so this isn't all about me. I mean, do you think Rajah Bell is a dirty player?
I think he's probably the best player in the league, generally speaking.
There you go.
I mean, I've just been accused of being a Suns fan so many times this week by Antonio. I'm just running with that.
No,
I got a text right here. Say it, Peacock. But I got a text here I want to share.
Antonio, about you know, is Jason Richardson dirty? And I mean, it's a flagrant foul, and it's a foul. And I don't like the Amari suspension, but I don't like Horry for 2 games either. 1 game I think is fine. 1 game, the other guys are fine. They didn't throw punches. They didn't get in a fracas. They were held back. They didn't make it onto the court and escalate anything. 1 game for Horry. It's basketball. It's a hard foul. Yeah. You can take it. It's like if you could read lips, you could see what Jason Richardson was telling Okur after that hard foul.
Hard foul.
Don't be a blank. It's just a hard foul.
Don't be a blank.
And that's, I mean, and you have to be a man at some point. And I think I like the way Steve Nash has handled the whole thing.
I agree. He's
been great about it. And I think a lot of players throughout the playoffs have been great. Fisher could have taken exception to a lot of things. And so I've been pretty impressed. Although it is the playoffs and you don't see a lot of brawls in the playoffs because people know how much is riding on it. And they don't want their butts on the line like that.
That might be one of the worst things about it is the fact that the players and coaches and just about everybody involved with it does feel that we just all wish it hadn't happened this way. I wish that all the players were still in the game. I think that's what Nash was saying, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I would say at one point there, you would only give Horry 2 games if anybody else got suspended. If nobody got suspended, if it was just that, I'm fine with Horry with 1 game. 2 games seems more legitimate now that 2 people have been suspended, albeit I think anybody would trade their aging power forward for Amari Stoudemire any day of the week. I know that wasn't their intention. Maybe their intention was just for Steve Nash to lose his head or somebody else to lose their head. But I think Horry 2 games for 1.
Lose his head, there it is. What? That came right from the Spurs drawing board in the pregame.
That's
said,
right.
We're going to make Steve Nash lose his head.
Got the little diagram.
We're
going to
decapitate
said,
Steve Nash. That's from the drawing board.
They got
the
Phoenix is his new team. I'm going to get you a box of Phoenix.
They got the diagram, and they got a diagram of Steve Nash's groin with the check mark. Amari Stoudemire, they have his Achilles, and they have a check mark against that. I just want to see who's up next, you know.
Man, there's more
tears. I'd look
tears.
Out if you were Sean Marion, though.
There's more tears coming out of these Phoenix people. It's like rain. It's going to block the sun, and it hopefully will set this evening.
Check this out. Here's your homerism, folks. Okay. So Ann and I have a little correspondence via text message right during the games. It's fun to do, right? So here's what I send to him. He says something like, it started with him saying, after that Spurs beat the Suns in game 5, Ann says something like, "Woo, you know, lucky we won that game." And he actually had an audio file where he said, "Woo," in that exact way.
There you go.
But I send back, "I'm not impressed considering the circumstances." A little bit of bear baiting. Very unfortunate that officials have been involved so prominently once again. Here's what Ant says back to that, if I can get to it. Hang on just a second. We got technology in here. It's always difficult to deal with.
One never wants dead.
And just to clarify, this is Ant bear backing? Is that what you called it?
No. Oh. I said I was bear baiting. Oh, okay. Bear baiting. Okay. Baiting a bear. Okay, that's the wrong one. Here we go. Ant says back, "You'd want to be joking. Complaining belongs to fans of Phoenix. Spurs went into a no-win situation and found victory. We were shorthanded, too. Ori for Stoudemire and Diaw. We were shorthanded, too." That's not shorthanded because the Suns were more shorthanded, which makes it a power play to continue
maybe
with the reference.
Maybe he was going by actual hand size about how short his hands were, because that's the only way I could see Ori for Stoudemire being even close.
And Diaw. Don't forget Diaw.
Is important. More important last year, I think, to the team, but Stoudemire and Ori.
I never said it was equal. What I said is that we were shorthanded, too. Our second guy off the bench wasn't there.
I think if we're doing the math, you are not shorthanded.
Yeah,
you
lose
one player,
they
lose two. Therefore, they are the ones shorthanded.
And you're on the power play.
Well, my point was that the Spurs weren't with their full squad. I still want an answer. Is Rajah Bell dirty? Is Jason Richardson dirty? I mean, because all I've heard all week is that Robert Horry is a thug. That's what I've read in the media, and I've heard Suns fans use that term. Is Jason Richardson a thug? Is Rajah Bell a thug?
Well, that's an interesting question you pose.
I would say he's not a thug, but he has thug tendencies.
Which one?
Oh, Rajah Bell. But I'm saying one person.
What about Jay Rich?
No, I would not say Jay Rich
so
at all.
So if his physical foul on Okur, why does that make Ori a thug?
Ori's a thug because he attacked a guy who was smaller than him. Attacked.
There you go. Now, is Steve Nash a thug?
Yes, definitely.
Actually, Steve Nash has a tattoo on it goes along his whole back. It says Thug Life.
Thug Life. There you go. Yeah. Plays Tupac on the way to the game in the Escalade. Is Steve Nash a thug?
Hey, at least Jay Rich picked on a guy bigger than him.
Very impressive.
Give him that.
Yeah.
Much bigger.
Well, I don't know where you're going with, though, Ant. What's Steve Nash do?
Just speaking of Okur, I got to get this out of the way. It was bothering me the whole time watching this series. With his side profile, doesn't he look like a Simpsons character? I'll just throw that out there. You guys notice that? Nobody else?
I didn't look
that
closely.
Watch Okur. Look for the side profile. Simpsons.
Where I'm going with the Nash commentary is that in the first round of the 2000 playoffs, I believe it was, was it 2000? When he was with Phoenix, they were getting beat by the Spurs. There was, and I guess he got inserted in the game for the actual purpose of trying to rile something up. He fouled Avery Johnson hard and threw the ball at Avery Johnson's head while he's on the ground. And a little mini fight
in practice?
Almost started.
Literally a mini fight because those guys are one of the two guys in the NBA.
There's this great quote from Avery, and I'll get it wrong, after that game where he said something like, "I don't have a problem with Steve Nash. I don't have a problem with the Phoenix Suns, but I'll be intimidated by no one," or something like that. So Steve Nash did a dirty play trying to spark his team losing. Does that make him a thug? Does that make him a dirty player? No, it makes him a guy in the playoffs who made a dumb play because his emotions got the best of him. Robert Horry did something a little bit more physical than he should have, but that doesn't make him a thug, and it doesn't make him a dirty player. He is serving punishment for what he did, 2 games. Stoudemire is serving punishment or served punishment for what he did, 1 game. We all agree that the rule needs to be opened up a little bit. Fine. That's for next year. For this year, Stoudemire did the dumb thing. Truthfully, this series turned, if it ever was not still in the Spurs' favor, because when it left Phoenix 1-1, it was still San Antonio's advantage. When Stoudemire decided to bitch about Ginobili and Bowen after a victory going into someone else's arena, he showed that the Spurs were still in his head. And then when Mike D'Antoni, after Game 3, whined and threw a tantrum, it showed that they were emotionally soft and sweeter than Kool-Aid. That's just what they are. What I love even more is that after Game 4, when he wins, and I think I did text this to you, D'Antoni looks stunned that he won the game. I mean, he looked like, oh, my God, I'm out of here 2-2. We're not going to get eliminated at home again on Wednesday. I'm so happy. I don't know what to do with myself. I mean, I think he sneezed all over himself that night. This guy was not expecting – put your mind to it. You'll think about it. This guy –
wish I hadn't.
This guy was expecting, especially during the fourth quarter, to walk out of there down 3-1 with questions of why can't you beat the Spurs? Why can't you win in San Antonio? If you even win game five, you're going to lose here in six. Why do they defend you so well? Because San Antonio played great defense. I mean, the unfortunate incident at the end of that game takes away from, a great last 4 minutes by Steve Nash, and, B, 45 minutes of excellent defense by the Spurs. They kept the Suns to 40 points in the first half. I believe they had 60 through three quarters, or 67, whatever it was. And they forced Steve Nash, who was more the MVP than Dirk Nowitzki, into 8 turnovers. No one does that to Steve Nash. All of that got lost because of the incident.
Well, I have to say that Robert Horry does have thug-like tendencies. He's actually appeared in a rap video before. It was Tony Parker's rap video called...
So rap is thuggish now?
Top of the Game. Tony Parker's rap video, Top of the Game. You guys know what I'm talking about. Robert Horry was actually in that.
Wait, Tony Parker has a rap video?
Tony Parker's a rapper. You didn't know?
In French, man.
He is
yeah.
a rapper. That's his... So is he a basketball player?
He's
first
a rapist.
Or rapper first?
I don't care how nice he looks. Eva wants a little bit of edge to her man. There's something
wow.
there.
I had no idea. And the French gangster rap scene's off the hook right now, if you guys didn't know.
Off the Chazane.
Yeah.
So that's a thuggish thing to do, being in rap videos. Ron Artest had a rap video. One of the worst songs I've actually ever heard.
Ron Artest was also promoting, what was it, Allure's CD when he was being suspended, if you remember that interview when he was like...
Who's Allure? Allure?
Some girl group. It was like right around that, after the brawl, when he's being suspended, they like he's in the front seat of his Escalade and all the ESPN cameras are there. And while he's talking about his suspension, he brings out the CD that he's about to start promoting.
All right. That a kid. That's thuggish right there.
Yeah, that is pretty thuggish. There's never been an athlete that put out a good record of any kind. Rock and roll, rap. I can't think of one. Brandon Lloyd, terrible. Have you heard it?
Yeah.
And Shaq certainly was not up to my par.
Iverson's almost stayed out of the mainstream because it was so dirty. Yeah, you talk about Eazy-E with
the
lyricism.
Hold of that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you can make Eazy blush, that's usually you've maybe
just read
too
today
far.
Actually, Lasting's Millage from the Mets. Mets
yeah.
farmhand just got in trouble for being on someone's rap record and uh-oh. Inappropriate lyrics. And
do you guys watch the Boondocks?
No.
Okay.
I have seen it.
You'd appreciate the term thug in love. Just if you watch it, it would make more sense.
Thug in love?
Thug in love.
Or thug in love.
Thug in love,
like
you know.
Love from a thug.
THUG apostrophe N.
Gotcha.
Thug in love.
Gotcha.
So, back to the thug life of the NBA.
Yeah, hey, no, you're right, though. And that's why we are sports outside the mainstream, because we don't get into we're into it now, but I think all of us would agree that the basketball is what's counting here. And this whole game, this whole series has come down to now this one incident, as we've termed it earlier. And we should really get back to basketball and really focus on what's really going on in hand, right? Am I right about this?
And that's thank why, you. To tell you guys the truth, I couldn't wait to get here on Friday because we are outside the mainstream. And the one thing that...
you scratching back there?
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm at the turntable.
Will you really scratch? We got time today.
No, we are not scratching. We have neerly the time nor the inclination to do any type of scratching.
Grab some butt rock.
but no, I would say...
The mainstream media all came onto this... You know, thug
but,
and dirty team. And I think some of it, quite honestly, is
didn't
the
he just say let's get back to basketball?
But
the,
I would
the mainstream media wants a rivalry. They want a rivalry that they can point to in the playoffs that get people excited. And let's be real. Chicago, Detroit, these guys, you know, Ben Wallace is hanging out with his old Piston guys. Cleveland versus Detroit has the potential to become a rivalry. But until Cleveland gets a few more players or at least wins a series against Detroit, it's one-sided. I think the league was hoping Dallas-San Antonio would go there, but the Mavs got ousted in the first round. So you need this. The media wants something to talk about, because talking about how great Duncan is, yet he's underrated, and how wonderful it is to watch the Suns go 100 miles an hour every play gets old.
But I would say, you know, despite all that, to question whether or not these players are thugs or not, when it gets to the opinion of everybody, it seems, in sports who does not live in the Metroplex / San Antonio area, that these players are dirty, they are. And to say Steve Nash would be, if Steve Nash was wearing like a hooded sweatshirt on campus, you would never know him. You would never see him. He's the most unassuming guy out there.
Is that because you pay more attention to black men?
I do pay more attention to 6'10 black men that look like Will Smith. Than I do to...
Damon pays a lot of attention to black women, by the way.
Hey, now. But 6'1", like, Canadian point guards wearing hooded sweatshirts, you know, I would never even notice him. He's the most unassuming guy out there.
So that means
to call him
not,
a thug.
That means he's not capable of doing a dirty play?
It doesn't mean that. It just means it will go...
I don't know what it means. Can you explain what it means? I'm a little confused myself.
It means that he physically can't do anything that bad.
You saying that short guys can't fight?
I'm exactly saying that. And if anybody wants to walk through this door,
by the way,
KSFS.
I would like to say that Robert Ory's thug status has certainly been revoked. He has a MySpace page.
I'm assuming somebody else created that for him, but
Yeah, he is. Bobby Vegas is there.
Yeah, I get what Eamon is trying to say, but it's just it's not flowing. I mean, the media. When you say everyone in the media, you're right. The media, who's non-athletic, is all jumped on this. If you listen to former basketball players talk,
who are in the media,
whether they're in the media, yeah, I guess there you go. Who are in the media, have all come from the side of today's players are weak. What Ory did was nothing but a hard foul. It didn't even deserve flagrant foul status. He shouldn't have been suspended. The guys on Phoenix's bench shouldn't have been suspended. Steve Nash dramatized it by acting out. These guys are now soft nowadays. That's what NBA players have been saying, former NBA players, guys that have actually been in playoff games. That's it. The only people that are calling the Spurs dirty or Ory dirty or this series too physical are writers who need something to write about. That's it. So guys who actually have played sports don't have a problem with it. So I will trust the opinions of former NBA players. Ask Charles Barkley, ask Kenny Smith, ask Greg Anthony, you know, ask Magic Johnson. Any of these guys will tell you what Ory did was excessive, but not that bad. What Bruce Bowen, the knee that connected with Steve Nash, his little Canadian area, that happens. That's how you clear space. But a foul was called, so there's nothing dirty there. If you don't like it, back off the guy. I think we all watch TNT and we hear Barkley talk about if a man's going to embarrass you, put him on the floor. What Jason Richardson did to Okor, that's what you do. It's a double-digit game with 20 seconds left. I'm not going to let you dunk on me. If you don't want to get fouled hard, pull the ball out. That's basketball. That's the playoffs. That's men.
That's men.
Man law.
Man law. All right, good enough. I think we got to wrap up this Spurs Suns stuff.
I will.
I'm quite frankly
I think everybody just wants of the opinion. Everybody wants the Suns to win Game 6 and put this down to a Game 7 where everybody's at full strength. Nobody's shorthanded. Nobody's on the power play. Nobody's on anything.
So if the Suns lose tonight, what does that mean that they lost full strength
that
with the Spurs not?
This is like the strike shortened season when the Spurs won the championship. It doesn't mean anything.
Exactly. It means that Phoenix wasn't good enough.
It's cheap.
It means Phoenix wasn't good enough.
It means it's going to be a cheap series win.
The bottom line of this whole series is that's the way it's been since the playoffs started. Is this was going to be this is essentially the finals, anyways.
Although Detroit would heavily want Rasheed Wallace would want to fight all of us for saying that.
Well, Rasheed,
I'll fight him. I will take him on
as long as he dyes that gray spot in his hair. Then he'll get but yeah, so go ahead, Owen, because I got something before we go to break. But
oh no, I was just going to say, I want to wrap up the Warriors Jazz a little bit. It seems appropriate. I mean, it's a little bit outdated at this point, but I mean, for us, we got to talk about it and we have some good thoughts. I've got some thoughts. You guys down with that?
Oh yeah. And yeah. Who was at the arena last week? I mean, last week, you know, Eamon was looking like Randy Fun, and now he's just looking like a kid with the bowl cut.
Yeah. Thank you. That's always good to attack physical appearance on radio.
Now that was a good one.
Yeah. Were you guys looking at
porn over there?
What are you guys looking at?
No, I got emails over here. KSFSports@gmail.com.
All right, it's good times. Well, anyway, yeah.
Hey, wait, hold on. One more thing.
Okay.
We got an email, Corey on a laptop, Arizona. He says, 3 years ago, the Spurs were considered, I'm reading this on the spot, so hopefully he didn't swear. 3 years ago, the Spurs were considered soft. Now they're the dirtiest team in sports. They weren't even dirty before Amari said anything. Every team has a dirty player. Look at Roger last year hitting Kobe. Phoenix fans hailed him. Bowen is like Bin Laden here. D'Antoni is scared, and so is his team. They know this is their last chance. I should reference with Corey, as I said last week, he's in Arizona, and trust me, the guy's getting really angry with all the Suns fans down there, and you think you're hearing it from here.
I feel for you, man. I'm seeing all the message boards and these people. The referees have stole it. Why do bad things always happen to us? I hate San Antonio, and they wear black uniforms too, and that just shows why they're bad guys, and but blah, blah. I hope there's some Suns. I wish there was a Suns. Well, I guess there's a Suns fan here. Amen. I really wish that there was someone here who could try and tell me intelligently why Phoenix is the victim.
Because the Spurs are cheap.
If I let Owen have the mic, he might be able to speak on this. But, okay, Owen, go ahead.
Oh, I'm Owen? Okay, that's good radio.
You don't talk back to me. Now you don't get a mic. I'm sorry.
I was confused by that one. Eamon had something to say, but Eamon's not going to get it.
So the Spurs are basically the Raiders of the NBA now. Is that what we're talking about?
Oh, God, I hope not. We're in the playoffs, so we're certainly not that.
Getting all the penalties. All right, Eamon.
No, the best comparison, especially with us currently having three championships, is to the New England Patriots. The Patriots really were underappreciated until that third title.
Well, it was. It was like the Suns or the Rams. The Rams were kind of that soft team that just got up and down and whatnot. And then the Patriots knocked them around once in a while. Or actually, that entire game knocked them off their game. I just think nobody here is a huge Suns fan.
Except for Eamon.
Except for Eamon.
I'm not a Suns fan. I don't like them. I don't like teams that,
blush. It's okay.
Despite the teams that jump on bandwagons and everything. I would just say that Spurs fans, they're difficult to like.
When Eamon comes in here next
Spurs
week
fans
with,
do you know
with Steve Nash
me?
Hair, we'll know. That's we'll right. know.
The Spurs, I mean, the
you're
best,
making it very difficult to like the Spurs,
the
I'll say that.
Is,
yeah, very, very difficult.
I will agree with you on that one, actually.
I love the Suns fans that are, David Stern wants this. Really? David Stern wants a team from San Antonio, Texas, who the television ratings show don't get as high as other teams, and who people in the media call them a slow, plodding team, even though they aren't. So it seems to me that the bias is assuming that they play the way that they did in 99, which they haven't ever since Tony Parker and Ginobili came along in 2003 and really became a part of the lineup. The media perception is that the Spurs are boring. All you've heard is, oh, God, if Jazz play Spurs, oh, man, this is going to be horrible. But you also heard that the Jazz couldn't run with the Warriors, and they did. It just shows you that people that don't play basketball usually don't know what they're talking about, and I think this whole incident is another example.
You are ugly when you're angry.
Yeah.
I am, but you know what? I'll have an outlet tonight.
After we had a segue off from Spurs Suns, yes, the Jazz, they defeated the Warriors. The Jazz are the better team. I think there's nobody here will discount that.
No.
The Derek Fisher thing was a bit overblown, and by overblown, I mean very overblown.
So now you're getting on the media?
No, I'm just getting on Derek Fisher and that being a home game. If he flew in from New York into the Oracle Arena, that would have been absolutely nothing. Nobody would have cared. He probably would have got booed. His daughter probably would have got booed about everything.
Ooh.
But I would
that's
just,
brutal,
I,
dude.
I would just say,
that's pushing it.
No kind
that's
of love it. For the Bay Area.
No, but I'm just saying, the Jazz were the better team. The Warriors live by the three, die by the three. That's what it basically came down to. They didn't make free throws. We've been talking about this probably going on 6 weeks. You got to make your free throws down the stretch. They didn't do it to hold on to game one. They didn't do it to possibly win game two. They just didn't make free throws, and you don't make your free throws, you don't make your three-pointers, you're not going to win against good and well-coached teams like the Utah Jazz. So I got no problem with the Jazz winning. I think there was no adverse calls, no anything. It just came down to the better team, the better coach won. And I have no problem with that.
After that little comment about his daughter, I was going to say we need to get you a heart, and maybe we can borrow one from a son's. Oh, wait, the Suns don't have any heart.
Oh.
Was a little bumpy. You might want to work that one
the,
out.
The Jazz really showed why Jerry Sloan is so respected. His crew is physical. I mean, they are the most physical team in the Western Conference playoffs from the first eight that were there. They're going to make Phoenix San Antonio winner. Work their butt off because they make you run through screens, they rebound, they do all that boring stuff that when you watch basketball on film looks real smooth. Warriors got a bad matchup. I mean, I guess Mavericks fans complain that if they would have got anyone but Golden State, they'd have been in the second round. Well, if the Warriors had gotten Houston, I think the Warriors would be going to the conference finals. So luck of the draw kind of worked itself out. But, no, Utah played really well. It's too bad Golden State gave away game two because then we would have had a 2-2 series. And who knows? It may have gone seven. It would have been great to have one more at Oracle. That just would have been a great way to finish off their postseason run. But Jazz against the Suns, they were actually 3-1 against Phoenix this year, further proving that they can run with anybody.
Listen to this guy pretending he thinks the Suns have a chance in that series right now.
Yeah. And if they play the Spurs.
Anybody who doesn't know, if you haven't listened to the show, this is your first time, Antonio is thinking in his head, okay, I'll say this Suns Jazz garbage,
blah, blah,
but
blah,
no
Spurs,
way.
Spurs, best yeah. team in the world, blah,
and,
blah, blah.
And if they play the Spurs, Utah and San Antonio split their season series 2-2 with
Spurs
the whole team
four.
Winning all of them.
Anyway, no, I think I don't know if I agree with you about that, about if the Warriors were facing the Rockets. Possibly. I do agree it's a better matchup, but ultimately what happened was the Warriors ended up in the same place they were at before they started that hot streak, before they went 16-5. They were a team that, as I said in that email and as I complained about at the time, intensely frustrating to watch, so frustrating that a non-Warriors fan such as myself can really get visibly angry watching them because they take such bad shots, have such useless possessions, and stop the ball and shoot at the wrong times. And that's how the series with the Jazz went. The first two games when it was sort of
when Barron was able to more drive and dominate, they had more flow.
Sure, that's more specific, but in general, it was the teams were kind of figuring out who has the momentum and where does it all go.
Good point.
Yeah, it looked like it could go either way at that point, but once it got to Jazz 2-0 And aside from Game 3, which was the obligatory Warriors home crowd, all that, you know, rah-rah stuff, after that point, the Warriors were just the same team they were before the hot streak. They were a team that relied on the three-pointer, and the three-pointer wasn't there.
I'm with you. During Game 5, I texted a good buddy of mine who's a big Warrior fan when they were down 1 point for a few possessions there in the fourth quarter. And I'm like, would it kill them to run a play? When you're down 1 or 2 points, you're looking to shoot for the tie or the lead. You want to get the ball in your best player's hands, in this case Davis, and let him make something happen or distribute. These fast break three-pointers that aren't even set and Steven Jackson going one-on-one, and then even worse, every time you get to the rim, of course there's some contact. It's the playoffs. The Warriors got away with some contact, too, at the rim. That's life. You can't then complain to the official because you're looking to be bailed out. You need to run a play, and their inability to run a simple play and get an open shot, whether it goes in or not, ended up killing them.
Obviously, no secret that the Jazz were a much better rebounding team than the Warriors, and that edge was going to be there all series. But when Steven Jackson pulls up and shoots a three, and the Jazz literally have three players forming a perimeter within the perimeter that will not allow a Warrior to get anywhere near the hoop, there's no chance they're going to rebound those shots. It's wildness. It's just a bad shot.
Right. I think we're all in agreement here that it was only a matter of time before the Warriors were going to, you know, the clock was going to strike midnight, basically. They weren't even a good three-point shooting team during the season.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
You knew there wasn't that good of a chance against a really good team, and they were going to get out-rebounded, and they were going to get beat inside, that they would really be able to shoot like that 4 games out of 7 and win a game in that fashion. And you're right. They can't run a play, though. Barron's the only guy that can really – Barron and Monte. And Monte got no minutes. He had the shortest leash. I couldn't believe that because he is so lightning. He's on the court, and it spurs something that they don't have. Sorry, I just said Spurs. Don't go there. Oh. Don't go there, Antonio. It creates something that they don't have in anybody else. Jay Rich can't create off the dribble. When Steven Jackson tries to go off the dribble, it just becomes the Steven Jackson show for about 24 seconds. So,
which sometimes works, and sometimes it's the most painful thing you've ever
game
watched.
Game 5, he did not have it, and he didn't seem willing to acknowledge it.
Yeah, he will never.
I would also say I was talking to friends during the game as well. Up into a certain point, the Warriors have to. That's good stuff. The Warriors have to play their style of basketball, and they have to blow out teams at home on the road. Because if it gets down close, the Utah Jazz, the Spurs, the Rockets, any other team has an actual offensive and offensive sets to fall back on and actually run plays in the fourth quarter. The Warriors, when they get down there, it was a bunch of one-on-one. Jason Richardson, Steven Jackson, Baron Davis, and if they don't make their shots, it was you know, plain as day that you could see that they were not going to be able to get their offense going. They have to blow out teams. And, you know, as you said perfectly, the clock struck midnight. I mean, good team, good coach, and that's all it was. And I still have zero problem with this series, zero problem with officiating, zero problem with anything. It's just the Warriors, they just ran out.
And even though it took 2 weeks, who ended up being right in all this was Charles Barkley. He very clearly said in this series against Utah, and I thought for sure the Warriors were not only going to have a great chance to win, I thought they were going to go 6, maybe 7 games. He said their legs are going to give out on them, having to play a physical team night in and night out. And without those extra days off they got in the first round against the Mavs, he said you watch their shooting percentage go down every game. And he's right. Every game it slowly crept down lower and lower. And you know Steven Jackson had to be exhausted. He was guarding Boozer. And I know Boozer, there's no doubt he's shown himself to be top-notch power forward. But I don't know if he's that great because he wasn't really playing against anybody that can match him.
I was wondering the same thing. I'm thinking Boozer was great for me all year on my fantasy team, though, I got to say. So I got some respect for Boozer's game. But I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, well, the only big guy they really had in there was Biedrich. And he's tall, but he's still so raw.
He looked lost in that series. It was sad to watch.
Not boxing out. He should have had so many more rebounds than he had. But you're right. Like, going against a legit opponent, how's he going to look against Duncan? How's he going to look against Stoudemire? How's he going to look against, you know, anybody that's the top notch, even if they get all the way to the finals against the Pistons? How's he going to look? But I do have more respect for Utah coming out of that series than I did coming in. I thought the Warriors had a lot better chance, but they showed that both in crunch time and when the Warriors were still hot and running, that they could stick with them. So they can play both games, and I think that bodes well for them.
Yeah, I think that all things being equal, I do like Utah's game more than I like the Warriors. And it's kind of funny. I mean, it's the Bay Area, and the Jazz aren't going to make you want to turn the TV on and watch them. I mean, Jazz Spurs, I'm there with the mainstream and with everybody. That I'm probably not going to spend a whole lot of time seeking out, hey, when's Jazz Spurs on next? Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to be real stoked on that one. But when you're in the game and when you are watching, I prefer to watch the Jazz over the Warriors because great teamwork, good strategy. As you said, Jerry Sloan, very bright, and all of his assistants. They play great defense. They move the ball. They have a plan, and they execute it. And you can see that. And I like the way they play defense. They swarm the ball in the air. You talk about a swarming defense. Usually we think of like the Warriors with the quick hands and knock the ball out on the dribble. Well, in the air, the Warriors would go to the rack. And like you said, they had to hope they were going to get a foul called because otherwise they were going to get swatted. And there were times when it looked like against a lot of teams, there's a dunk. Part of that is just the fact that it's the playoffs. But it looks like Steven Jackson's going in and, oh, here comes Jackson with a nice little reverse layup. He can't get that shot off. It's a foul at best for him because the Jazz, Kirilenko being the key, but some of the other big guys and guys like Paul Millsap who come in off the bench, they're swarming in the air. You just can't get off shots against them.
And the Jazz play very physical, as we've said, and they certainly were going to be more physical than the Warriors. It's their style. I think the officials always adapt to what your team's style is. They let the Warriors get away with more hand stuff around the ball for steals. The Jazz, as a result, get away with more sort of shoving and movement, especially when you have a bigger body on smaller guys. What I really want to say, though, Nelly and Sloan, excellent coaches. You can see with Utah how Sloan has taken this young team and a lot of role players, and everyone has a role. They play it the right way. After none of those games did either coach complain about officiating. At no point did Jerry Sloan say, you know, Darren Williams got two fouls in the first quarter. Some of those could have gone by. That cost us the game. At no point did Nelly say, you know, Boozer's throwing my guys to the floor. They just don't want us to win. None of them bought into it. None of them complained. None of them wanted their players to act that way, and no Jazz player acted that way. Unfortunately, Steven Jackson and Barron, I think, let the officials get way too much in their own heads at times. But nobody complained. You understand that both sides get away with things. Get over it. Play through it. If you're good enough, make the shot. If Steven Jackson makes the three at the end of game one, Warriors probably win. If Petras makes his free throws at the end of game two, Warriors win. This isn't about officiating. It's about play on the court, something that the Warriors do need to get better at next year in terms of their maturity, and something that the Phoenix Suns, in my opinion, also could get better at.
A lot of whining in the Western Conference playoffs in general.
I will say that was kind of a meandering back to the Suns-Spurs series and a backhand at Mike D'Antoni for not bringing up that. But I will say, Warriors, right now, it's now the offseason for them. For the first time it's been this late, they've started it. But, yeah, Nelly's talking about retirement, which I don't think is going to happen. I don't know your guys' opinion on that. We haven't discussed that. Baron Davis, they're going to have to re-sign him to a contract extension. And the two other guys are Matt Barnes and Michael Petras. He may have played the last game there. They have to re-sign. I think Davis is definitely a must. Barnes will probably get some money somewhere else. He fired his agent. And I think he's going to be one of those guys that gets a huge offseason contract and doesn't turn out to be that much of a player.
He would want to go somewhere that plays fast.
Yeah, and Petras and Nelly are probably top priority, but right now it's Baron Davis. But, yeah, these are the things they're going to have to worry about in the offseason. The core will still remain there for the next 2 years, but I think those are some key guys they have to think about too.
I think they need to talk to Indiana, see if they can get Dunleavy back. I mean, you talk about a jump shooter and a tough player. I mean, he would be huge for this team right now.
Speaking of Dunleavy, I was thinking that might be Amon's player. Remember we were talking about you got maybe he's a little Dunleavy on the court. I can't wait.
Yeah.
Can we give him that little ugly headband?
No. I don't know. We were joking.
Nobody's taking the headband from you, I can tell you that much.
I was joking on the court. I was playing some pickup yesterday with some guys doing a little two-on-two, and someone actually said Troy Murphy to me, and I was like, whatever, Miles Simon. he's a little short guy. He was wearing an Arizona jersey, and I was like, Miles Simon. He was like, I'll take Miles Simon. I was like, no, Miles Simon in the NBA, not Miles Simon at Arizona. He was like, oh.
Legitimate question, not even going with the Sun Spurs thing. Do you guys think Barron is a bit of a dirty player? I mean, in all seriousness, that play on Derek Fisher, I don't think he meant to hit him in the head. I think his head happened to be there. But what was up with the out of the way from the ball elbow? What was up in the game five? He ended up, a foul was called on Fisher, and he turned, and his elbow hit Fisher in the head again. And he stopped himself and was like, hey, I'm sorry. But it seemed like maybe Barron was just getting testy. Maybe the fact that he's a little bit injured made him frustrated because he couldn't play his A game, but he keeps creeping on the borderline of like flagrant foul or ejection, and is the best player and leader on that team. The Warriors can't afford it.
I think the testy would just be the best way. He was just a little bit testy in that series. Hey, Eamon, what are you thinking about, dude? When he says dirty, Christina Aguilera.
Well, first of all, Eamon's not going to get a mic right now. So.
Oh, good call. I like very much.
Yeah, no problem. And with Barron, I thought he's like a. Maybe he's got like some secret hidden drug problem we don't know about. He's just, you never know. Like, he's just got that weird thing. He's like, who is this guy today? You know, who's he going to be tomorrow? I have no idea. I mean, it'll change in an instant. He's laughing, he's having a good time. Everyone loves him. And the next second, he wants to kill somebody.
Yeah, he's a cool cat in an interview. But, man, his physicality sometimes crosses the line on the court.
And, with his facial expressions, he's smiling, but you know he's angry. But then sometimes he looks intense and angry, but he's in the zone and he's having a good time. So it's like, who is this guy? From moment to – I don't know. He baffles me because he could go either way.
Yeah, I don't think he's dirty, but this series – you know, he's one of those guys that it seems like he wants every contact on him called, which all great players do. No
and
problem.
The same way.
But he sometimes complains too demonstratively too long, which is bad. Sets a bad example for the team. Yet he's also one of those guys that if you foul him a little bit hard, as we saw in the Dallas series, he's ready to get up and get in your face. But when he fouls you hard, it's like, hey, that's just basketball.
And while he's arguing, he puts his team at a 5-4 disadvantage, too.
Exactly.
Which is really frustrating.
Brutal
as
about
a fan,
the Warriors,
you're like,
yeah.
Get down there, make one of your steals, and go back and make a play and score. Don't just bitch for 10 seconds.
I think what we're talking about points to a general problem this playoffs, which has been in the Western Conference, that the whining has just been unbelievable. How much whining and how much talk about the officials there is on the court. Can you please play the game? The flopping, the whining, all that stuff is so annoying. I say only the Western Conference. I haven't watched the Eastern Conference, so that's
so
why.
Maybe
I
they have flopped.
Yeah, hey, maybe it's been the greatest basketball ever played.
If a player flops and no one's watching, does anyone care?
Exactly. Good point. Yeah, I don't know.
The key with the Warriors, though, going forward, this is my last thing on the Warriors, is I'm just trying to figure out what we're going to have to give up to get Kevin Garnett in blue and gold. That's what I'm wondering.
Perfect style
maybe
for
a
this
little,
offense.
It'll take Monte for sure. If there's any big offseason trades, Monte's the first one that's going to be involved because he can go start for somebody, and he's got a bright future, and everybody knows that. And he's cheap right now, and he's signed through at least one more season after next year, I'm pretty sure.
You guys disturbed at all by the crowds in this series? I heard some talk about, Eamon, you were at one of the games, about that after, in Oakland, after it got to a point when when the Warriors were kind of like a cliche, cool thing happening in the Bay Area, that in the final game there, you guys may have heard this. This isn't, you know, this is what I heard, and I'm repeating it.
I read that as well.
Yeah, exactly. That maybe the crowd got a little bit more white collar, yeah.
Yeah, it did.
Do you think it did?
Without a doubt. I mean, the fans that were there were not the most hardcore of Warrior fans to begin with. The one confusing start was, I think it was a Friday. Yeah, Friday at 6 p.m. That was a late arriving crowd. People getting off work and everything else. I mean, that was, first of all, an odd start time, but it definitely showed you where this was priority amongst the fans there. I mean, you had the hardcore fans who have obviously had season tickets there for 10, 12 years. They were there. The people that showed up late are the people that were more concerned about where the nacho stand was than anything else. So the crowd could probably stand to be a bit better, but still one of the loudest places I've ever been in quite some time.
And the sad thing is that Dallas series was the finals to a certain extent for them. I mean, I'm telling you, people who I knew who were not big basketball fans rallied behind this 8-1, best record in the league, MVP, possible coach of the year, Nelly's old team, and when they won that game one, the Bay Area just took off, and the Warriors played like it. I mean, Steven Jackson couldn't miss a clutch shot. Baron Davis dominated, and they should have won the series in five. They won it in six. What a great story. Now, second round, here come the Utah Jazz, not a former team, not a rivalry. Their first time in the playoffs in 4 years, so it's not this big, bad bully on the block. You kind of feel like you've accomplished something, and I think that trickled down to the fans who – were at the arena for the Mavericks games an hour ahead of time. Now they're showing up a little bit late, you know, to game three against Utah. And in game four, when the Warriors really could have used more of their energy down the stretch, you got these corporate types that just want to be able to say, you know, I went to a Warrior game during that 07 run. That was great.
You know, we'll come back to the crowd thing, but you actually mentioned, I think Baron Davis had a quote where he said something to the degree of, well, we just beat the Mavs. That was like our NBA Finals, so we got to try to get back up for the second series. I appreciate the honesty on Davis's part, and I mean, it's true that it kind of felt that way. But do you think the Warriors suffered from a little bit of happy to be there syndrome this year's playoffs?
It definitely was the case. Reading literally, like, and hearing them firsthand, all the post-game quotes from all the players, they said they didn't come out there with the energy they needed. Game three was, you know, happy to get back home, needing to win the game. And game four, they said everybody was just lacking energy. You heard it from Biedrich, from Ellis, from Davis, even Jackson a little bit. They were just lacking a certain amount of energy, maybe that the crowd didn't give them. I doubt that was that. You have to get up for this game. If you're a professional player, if you can't get up for this game, there's not much you can get up for. But it's just, they said lacking energy, lacking a little bit of focus, and they said they were going to come out and
show up in Utah, and they really didn't show up in Utah either. So it was kind of the case of, yeah, fatigue maybe just setting in, either mental or physical fatigue, and they did not show up in those last two games there.
It's about expectations. I mean, you look at the Pistons out east, Spurs and Suns out west, and I guess the Mavericks had this mindset as well. When you're expecting to go far, it's first round is just a team. Second round is just a team. And usually by the conference finals, you're now meeting up with another big boy, and you increase your level of play every round. Your crowd increases their level of noise every round. When you're the little engine that could, everything is about that first round, playing perfect, every big shot, every break goes your way. But when you've done it, you weren't expecting to be playing past the first week of May. Everything now is gravy, but you're going up against people that are just getting better with every series because they've been doing this before. The Bulls swept the Heat. How great was that to sweep the defending champs? Now they go up against Detroit and got finished off last night, a team who believes we're going to find a way to methodically win every series and get to the finals. And you hear great teams and coaches talk about not too high after a win, not too down after a loss, play through it. It's the first team to four wins. And the Warriors as a young team really didn't have that kind of mindset. And I think it showed this series big time. And it's also just a learning curve. I mean, I think teams like the Warriors and Bulls will be better next year.
Maybe that the Oakland Arena deal about the white collar, blue collar, all that stuff was kind of disturbing. But the whitewash in the Utah crowd was really even more disturbing. Where's the flavor? Maybe it's because we're in the Bay Area, but I like to have a little flavor in the crowd. You know what I mean? I don't want to walk around and, or look around and see just all these wild-ass fans with their crazy...
So Amon wouldn't have been happy, huh?
Amon would have been very happy in Utah, but...
Well, no, you said earlier that he has jungle fever, so I figured he...
I did not use those words.
I didn't realize that about Amon, but... Yeah, and the thing that bothered me about Utah, that it was really whitewashed, and that was a little bit disturbing. I mean,
so disturbing.
If you know,
I thought
you know going in it's going to be like that, but it is kind of weird to see.
Yeah,
that
it's
sometimes.
Still just bad. I don't like it.
And the thing that bothered me was them trying to steal the Warriors' thunder in game one. Everyone had the light blue shirts on, and it said like we also believe or something.
Fans
weird,
are idiots.
You know, something
how
like
weird
that.
Was game five? They were wearing yellow shirts that said we believe but crossed out. So from a TV perspective, I actually thought there were a bunch of Warrior fans in the first two rows, but yeah. It was Jazz fans, and I'm just can't.
Fans are idiots. Remember
but
the thunder sticks and rally monkey?
Still hate
but fans I will say to my faithful fan out there, I was not tongue-tied. I just did not have mic privileges at that point, so. To respond to those claims of my racial bias or something along those lines. Utah Jazz was obviously a crowd from Utah, so it is what it is.
I know, but I just don't like it.
No, I agree. How
I
weird,
mean, you guys find
it
a little it,
disturbing
though? At least?
A, disturbing,
it's basketball.
Yes. B, how weird is it that what percentage of that crowd probably doesn't drink any alcohol?
Well, look at the team,
though.
I mean,
it is kind of weird that you know, at least half the people there consume no liquor. And I mean, not that you have to be drunk to enjoy a game, but it's like, if you don't drink caffeine and you don't drink liquor, why are you all so happy and making noise?
Well, I would say
Prozac's okay.
Look at their roster overall. I mean, it is nowhere near, you know, in terms of race, the same as the Warriors.
You don't think Kirilenko doesn't tan easy?
No, I'm going to say Kirilenko. I mean, we can do some serious debating on some of these players, but that'll just get into another, you know,
yeah,
show
don't,
entirely.
Don't get on Boozer for being light-skinned. Ain't nothing wrong with that.
Darren Williams or
is he Middle Eastern?
Might Harpering.
Where's the name Boozer come from? That's what I'm confused about. That sounds like it would be a mistranslation of a Middle Eastern name. That's
I was
going
to say from a drunk family. But
could be that. Could be.
I don't know, man. That's a good quote. You know what? Maybe Boozer and
maybe
Williams actually are darker, but after playing a whole year in Utah and not getting any
they
real
got a little
sunlight,
whitewash,
they
yeah.
just start to get lightened
you
up.
You might be on to something. By the way, Darren Williams, word to Courtney Penn. Darren Williams belongs on the Courtney Penn All-Ugly Team. Courtney Penn, a former KSFS radio host and a very good one, who every year did an All-Ugly Team of NBA players. And players such as Sam Cassell were regulars. I think Darren Williams, yeah. with his strange hairline and balding spot, And toad face, I think, really makes the
so
squad.
So you're saying he won't be having an Eva Longoria or Jessica Alba come into the arena anytime soon for him?
Probably not.
Yeah.
That's too easy, though, an all-ugly team for the NBA. You only get five slots.
You get 12.
I mean, you can do that. Oh, you get
12 plus you get
the
three.
You get the bench, too?
15,
okay.
Yeah.
Because there's probably
I mean, Kirilenko
at least 12
would have to be
seven-footers
there, right?
That deserve to be on that team.
Kirilenko, yeah.
Amon, would you care to speak?
But thank you for that privilege. I would say on Antonio's team, a lot of the players would be suspended for probably leaving the bench early or something like that, though. Mm. No.
That was not good.
I can't wait to talk about the pickup game because I want to make the reference to Antonio putting people on their back today on the asphalt.
We could have used that.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah. Anyway, we still got plenty to talk about here on Sports Outside the Mainstream on KSFS The State. We're getting near the 2 o'clock hour, which means we do need to switch gears and go to baseball, but there is still that other conference, and I'm sure Peacock wants to talk about the NFL. Plus, maybe he'll scratch up some butt rock back there for us. Is that right?
Yeah, I need you guys to choose. I'm going to mix up a little Buster soundtrack featuring Phil Collins, but I need to know what's going to go on the other side. We got Poison Pin featuring the Denver Broncos jersey here. That's nice.
Nice. Custom Denver Broncos jersey says Poison Pen.
Snoop Dogg presents Doggy's Angels.
That's too mainstream. Let's go with something.
Really? Hey, it's explicit. It's got the stamp.
Doggies, let's go with something outside Angels? The mainstream.
So we're
going
to go Poison Pen, huh?
I think Poison
Pen looks like
might
a baller,
win.
So we'll see.
All right.
Would it have been more clever if you call like Doggy's Kittens or something like that?
Yeah, it would be nice. It would be nice.
Doggy's Kittens, that would be good.
Stay with us. Sports Outside the Mainstream.
This is pretty much the worst video ever made. We'll be right back.